Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Robert Yeager and the Tau Foundation.
Faith here with your podcast Welcome Toast. If you fatten up everyone else around you, then you look thinner. The following encore presentation of the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze is a favorite from our archives. Hope you enjoy this second helping.
I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet, I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, inviting you to eat, drink, and be merry with us. What a show we have for you. I'm giving the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze Brilliant Award to some people in New York City, and you'll find out why. We have a tip for the perfect sear on a steak. It makes a real difference. And then later in the show, we're going to focus on food at our fall fairs. And my favorite recipe to make now. Now, the recipe is Provençal roasted tomatoes with a buttery breadcrumb topping. So delicious. Plus, an anti-cancer eating tip and our latest delicious wine discovery. My treasured food buddies are here. Senior contributors Chris Prosperi, Alex Province, and Mark Raymond helping us out today on the show. The WNPR reporter, Lori Mack, who used to be on this show. It's such a great thing to have you with us.
Thank you.
Everybody.
Hey.
Don't you look with wonder at the smart things that food people come up with? I mean, people in every realm, but food included, because that's what we do.
I always say, why didn't I think of that? Right? You're looking at something, you're like, why? Exactly. Of course, why didn't I think of that?
Is it some kind of combination they make? Even your son was, what ice cream thing did he invent?
Oh, the Klondike bars, yeah.
He was inventing things like crazy with Klondike bars.
Yeah, the ice cream sundaes.
So I'd like to give the Food Schmooze Brilliant Award to an artist. Her name is Mary Mattingly, and she started a project in New York City. She took a 130-foot barge, and that used to be used for construction materials. She turned it into a floating forest.
No.
Filled it with soil and compost and is growing the most gigantic garden.
In New York.
Fruit trees.
This is such a great story. I love this story.
Took it, floated it to the South Bronx, which is considered, you know, you would say the food deserts.
Yeah.
You know, there are no supermarkets and everything. Docked it and said, free vegetables and fruit for everybody. And
incredible.
Nobody violates it. Nobody comes in and steals everything.
Yeah, because it's all free.
And there now people are thinking about, could this be duplicated somewhere?
I love that.
It's like a community,
gigantic garden. It's a community garden
on a barge right on the water.
Yeah.
It's probably great
you
for
could.
Growing
That's
stuff.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I love it.
And she found the barge in New York State, then loaded it with the soil and the gravel and the plants.
Of course.
Super clever.
Why didn't I think of that?
She was thinking about floating it to all the five boroughs.
Yeah, like a floating
market.
But
it really ended up in the South Bronx.
I think she needs four more barges.
I think towns
with
any kind of water need this. You know, where there are any kind of, I mean, in every town there are people who need food.
Absolutely.
What
in
the world?
And in Hartford there's so many like vacant parking lots and all these
could you imagine?
Spots you could grow stuff.
What a great idea.
Get rid of the lawns and just have gardens.
Other people have done something a little bit similar, never to the extent that she has done it. But I love that an artist did this artwork with
idea.
A social purpose.
Yeah.
And that it's working and flowering and produce. And, you know, her tomatoes were as late as everybody else's tomatoes.
But they're there now.
Oh, my God. So she's got our Food Schmooze Brilliant Award and all the people who helped her, because, of course, it took a lot of people.
Love that.
Chris, I'm particularly interested in your comments here, because I was looking for the best and easiest tip for getting a great sear on a steak. And I read food scientists' opinions about this. Flip it often. It's not that old thing about just flip it once. I read all kinds of things about this. So the thing I read that impressed me, tremendously with something so simple. And it was the best thing you can do is dry the steak with paper towels.
Pat it that, just pat it dry real quick. And it's the simplest thing to do. We do it whenever we sear something. It doesn't matter if
it's like a
fish
scallop.
Or
it's the same scallop. Idea.
Yeah, whatever it is. We keep a roll of paper towels on the line. And before it hits the pan, we just take
What does the wet steak, what happens to it that makes
steams.
It not
it steams
sear?
And it brings the temperature of the pan down. And it just
so
gets in the way.
That, you don't get that caramelized exterior.
You can still, but not as easily and not as good.
So just take paper towels and
just
dry
pat.
It.
And not, and you're not talking about like giving it a like a towel dry. Just take a piece of towel, pat
and
it on it.
Should you put it in the dryer? No.
No.
Dryer sheet.
The dryer. Just one pat.
Somewhere
on
the
side
in the world, someone is putting their meat in the dryer right now.
Mountain spring.
This will only take a second, honey, on 30 seconds on high. It'll be fine.
You know what, t-shirts are like
and hamburger. You know what? If you do a large volume, the other thing you can do if you don't want to do that is leave it uncovered in your refrigerator for an hour or so, and it will get dry, right? Because the fridge will
dry it out.
Yeah, pull the humidity out. Yeah, and it'll make it nice and dry.
One time a bunch of us were doing a steak, and we agreed to take the steak and put it on a rack in the refrigerator. Mm-hmm. For 10 days.
Like dry aged.
Oh, dry aged.
We dry aged our own steak and then put it on the grill. And it looked crusty. Yeah. It looked kind of horrible and scary. But the food science people said, no, it's still okay because it's been kept at a good temperature. And then it really was an incredible steak. So, Chris, that's dry aging.
That's dry aging. But the only problem is tricky to do it in a refrigerator because the things they dry age has a little bit of humidity in it. So it doesn't dry it out so much. Like yours probably got
you don't
really,
want it dry.
You don't want it like,
mummified.
It'll mummify it if you leave it in the fridge too long. Where if you go to like a Whole Foods and you see that case that it's dry aging stuff, they do pump a little moisture into those, right?
So the fossil effect on the steak was
goes
not
a little
a good
slow.
Idea.
Yeah, no, it still happens, but it doesn't happen at that extreme level.
We could knock it on the counter.
We're not looking to make beef jerky.
Yes, you could actually dehydrate it in there.
Think about this seared steak we're talking about, and then please listen to this, because we promised a health food tip. I want to congratulate the Food Network magazine for highlighting this. It's a study that was done at Kansas State University. That team at Kansas State tried to figure out if there was any way to eliminate the carcinogens that supposedly form on the surface of grilled meat and fish. Mm. There is has been a theory for a long time that if you grill meat or fish, a protein, especially if it turns a corner from caramelized to burning, if it chars too much, and sometimes that's delicious, but if it chars too much, it forms a carcinogen, and that is dangerous to people. I don't know about to what extent that's true. I've never read all those studies. I'm just saying that that's a thing in the science world that they talk about. So Kansas State tried to figure out, is there anything we could do about that? And the answer, according to them, is yes. They said that black pepper on protein is nearly 100% effective in eliminating the carcinogens that grilling is said to cause. You know, I always say said to cause. And even better if you add herbs, which have their own health properties, along with a pepper. So I'm thinking steak au poivre is like the healthiest thing.
That's a new one for me. I've never heard that one.
That's incredible. I think I'm going to rub my
everything with pepper.
Steaks and
salmon,
chicken and fish.
You know, these studies are so tricky, but it's interesting nevertheless.
There is a thing there, though. That is a concern of people that char is bad for you. But I don't know. Do you eat enough of it?
This was Kansas State University.
I mean, are you eating steak every day?
Barbecue sauce. That would be
I do.
Do you eat steak every day? That's probably not good for you anyway, right? I don't know. It's a tough one. But if all you have to do is put pepper on it,
I love beef.
We eat
I know
beef a
it's
lot.
Not.
I'll take my
you
chances.
Do? Yeah. Well, you have an Argentinian wife.
Exactly. Like. So it's either short ribs, it might be ribeyes, it might be tenderloin.
Really, you
Dana
do?
Dana loves the tenderloin because he does not like any of the fat.
I love
lighter flavor
beef.
Too.
Oh, me
and
too.
And of course, I read all the articles about how too much beef is not good for you, and they look at various cultures. Mm-hmm. That makes me want to look at Argentinian people and in terms of health profile and see, are they all dying at a young age? But then the question becomes, how are they raising their beef? What do the beef feed on? Because it's said that what the animal eats is how it affects your health.
Or maybe it's the red wine.
It
is a big wine drinking community.
We maybe have a wine. Stress, we have a red wine coming up on the show from Argentina. See?
See?
He's teasing
See?
You.
See?
Hey, how about tomatoes? Did you do anything interesting with them this year? Anybody
ate them?
Well, it took forever.
And now we're just eating them. And
oh my God! Just
and
how about
them.
When you just prepare them? Like you just slice the fresh, room temperature tomato and put a little sea salt on it, and you started handing them to us around the room.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God!
How about just
incredible.
A slather of mayonnaise?
Yeah.
A little bit of bacon on top.
I don't know
if it's just they taste better or did we wait so long that I'm just
that's a great app, by the
loving
way.
Them.
Yeah. I felt like I had had hothouse tomatoes so long into the season and they looked great. So I thought they were going to taste great. And I would think, you know, maybe I don't like tomatoes so much. I don't really get tomatoes.
And then today when
and
I gave you that slice, then you're like,
and
wow.
I thought, oh, these are really quite incredible. I love, you know, my thing, mozzarella, fresh basil, olive oil on bread, and just there's my sandwich. Sometimes a slice of prosciutto, a little drizzle of balsamico.
I found an interesting thing when I was visiting South Carolina last month. They take the green tomatoes, obviously, and people know they fry them, but then they layered them in between with this pimento cheese. And I got to tell you, it was so good.
I'm a fan of the pimento.
I could have eaten buckets of this.
Green tomatoes.
Fried green tomatoes. Yeah, and then they layered in between
the pimento cheese. Fried green tomato on top.
Exactly.
Like a Napoleon of fried green
tomatoes. Like a Napoleon with fried green tomatoes.
Oh, I love that.
It was so good.
That is really phenomenal.
So, you know, as you're getting towards the end of the season, you've got some of those green tomatoes still on the vine, and you don't want them to go to waste.
I don't even remember what's in pimento cheese besides pimentos. What's in there?
Well, it's a lighter cheese, right? It's a creamier cheese, like cream cheese or mascarpone that they whip
shredded cheese.
Yeah, and then they whip it in with mayonnaise and cheese, and it's a spread more than a like mozzarella where you slice
sandwiches,
or maybe even like a boar's end, where you add the herbs in. Yeah.
So the Delta Sky Miles, like in Atlanta, Georgia, has a big pimento station.
Come on.
I was taking plate loads of it during my delay.
Yeah, I see it on the grocery store around here, like seldom.
That's beautiful.
But there, down there, you see it everywhere.
Where's Alex? He's by the pimento cheese.
It's just fun to say.
Whose voice is that you're doing?
I don't know.
I seem to recognize that voice.
Somebody find Alex.
By the pimento cheese. I think everybody from late night comedy, everybody's doing the same voice. Okay, here we go. The reason I brought up the tomato subject is to tell you about the thing that I love to do this time of year the most as the real tomatoes are coming in. Lori, I didn't even ask you, Lori Mack. Are you a tomato on the grill person?
I would eat tomatoes any way you serve them. On the grill, on a piece of pumpernickel bread with some butter and a little salt and pepper.
Oh, that's pumpernickel, good idea. Little salt.
Little salt, little pepper.
Oh, yeah. Okay. My favorite thing to do right now is what I call roasted Provençal tomatoes. And we have this posted at the site foodschmooze.org.
Ooh.
It is so simple to do, and if you want to take advantage of these last of the season, really lush tomatoes, because it took so long for them to become ripe. Mm. Some people probably still have your green tomatoes, so that was a good tip for
with
them.
Pimento cheese.
So this is something that I had in my file years and years and years ago. I think it was from my chef idol of the world, this Joel Robuchon. Let me just say, of course, there is no improving on Joel Robuchon's recipe. But what I did was start to fool with this thing and wrote it down on a piece of paper in my food file. And so when I say it's adapted, I don't mean it's improved upon. It just means this is what was around. People seem to like it. So here it is. So you've got the oven on, and then in a skillet, put some oil in the pan, olive oil, and you cut fresh tomatoes from the farmer's market in half. You know, get the core out, and you put the cut side down enough to fit in the stovetop pan, and you sear them. You don't move them. You just sear them until they become caramelized, really kind of a dark brown, not black, but dark brown. It takes about 3 minutes to do that. And then you take them cook side up when they're that, you know, the right color. And you put them in a baking dish, a casserole dish of some kind. You cook all the tomato halves that way. We tell you how to do it for 8 people. And then if there'll be juices in the pan, you pour that over the tomatoes and season them with a little bit of salt. Now, in a little bowl, you mix together. This was a thing that I did that he didn't do. A little bit of butter, some diced up parsley, lots of minced garlic, and breadcrumbs. It's best if they're fresh breadcrumbs. And so you spread it on the tomatoes in the casserole dish, and then you pop that in that 400-degree oven. And then when the top is golden brown and the tomatoes seem to be sizzling, out they come. And if you want, you could sprinkle Parmigiano Reggiano or grated Gruyere on the top and make it a main dish. Or if it's a side dish, it practically goes with everything except red spaghetti sauce. Okay, so honestly, it is so delicious. I don't deserve a bit of credit, but honestly, this is a thing to do before the tomatoes go away.
I'm making that tonight.
Okay, don't forget, later on in the show, we've got somebody who's done a cookbook of the food from state fairs. And we in this region have a lot coming up. The food is so much fun. It's kind of goes from crazy to really, really sensible, good things. So stay with us for that. We've got a special wine discovery, lots of things to talk about. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. They sometimes are invisible. We don't know they're in our midst, but let me tell you, they are there in big numbers. We're online now at foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back.
Let's call the whole thing off. Oh, yes. You like potato.
And you like potato.
You like tomato.
And you like tomato.
Potato.
Potato.
Tomato.
Tomato.
Let's call the whole thing.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread.
Beans and cornbread had a fight.
Beans
knocked cornbread out of sight.
Beans.
Cornbread said, "Now that's all right.
Beans.
Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'll be ready.
Oh, jeez. I don't know. We just love the recording. I hope you're not sick of us saying that, but it's just such a brilliant recording. It's just unbelievable. So here's the part where I always say the same thing. And here's why I do. Podcasts, there are so many people know what they are. But I like to include people who don't.
Right.
And so... Yeah.
You got it.
Mark. So I just say it means a copy of the show that we have, you know, with our special juju we send to your to your inbox. And you don't have to do anything. If you're running around, you can't necessarily listen, but you want to have a little party in your life at various times, at any time. I know I do. That's why we do the show this
That's
way.
That's right. This is our little party.
This is what we look forward to with you.
Plus, there's the quote at the beginning. The best quote. On the podcast, you always start off with like a really cute...
Oh, you know what? I'm so glad you said that. So the podcast begins with something we don't do
on the show.
When we're recording the show.
Yeah.
And it is, we call it a welcome toast.
Yeah.
But it is some piece of food humor that somebody has come up with.
Yeah.
And we go through tons of things to find ones that we think are enjoyable. So that's
Pretty
what
cool.
opens. Then you've
Love
got
it.
The yeah. whole thing. So
it's a bonus for getting the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's a library. And if you want to go back to various shows, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So you just go to foodschmooze.org. Schmooze. I feel like the romper. S-C-H, like school. M-O-O, like the cow. Z-E. That's how you remember. Foodschmooze.org.
It worked for Alex.
It works for you, too.
Yeah.
Listen, it works
I
for me.
I wanted to give it
like,
to you, though.
You know? It's like you have to...
It's the only way we remember it.
Brush okay, up on your it. Yiddish. It's like, okay.
Alex and I, what? Schmooze.
You remember that guy. Lori, do you remember the man who wrote into me and said, I am outraged. You are not pronounced. That is not the Yiddish
oh, really?
Pronunciation of schmooze. It's not schmooze. It's schmooze. Now, he may be technically correct. You know, I would never presume to know.
Right.
Honestly. But I just sat there and I said to him, I wrote back to him and I said, I cannot say, welcome to the food schmuzz. It's just not going to, you know.
So we're making up words and pronunciations here.
You know, with good reason. You don't say I'm driving a LeSab. You say it's a LeSaber.
Yeah.
You just can't. It's become a thing. So this is what it is. Spoochmoos. I'm with my treasured food buddies. You're just going to be sick of this because I'm so madly in love with these people. Chris Prosperi, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Wine broker Alex Province of Hartford. Wine broker Mark Raymond, who lives in Wethersfield. Lori Mack, the WNPR reporter, is helping us out with today's show. Robin Doyen Aiken is on assignment for us. We've got the author of a book called Fair Foods, George Geary. He's done a great book about the food that we get at country fairs across America, including our region. So that's going to be great. Do you have this thing where I try to get certain vegetables into my diet? I don't necessarily, like broccoli, I don't really care unless it is roasted to a crisp. The steamed broccoli thing doesn't really interest me. I don't really like, but many people do. It's just my particular taste. I love this from the test kitchen at Food Network magazine. I really thought this was terrific. And it's about cauliflower rice. And you can, Lori, you know this, right?
Yes, I've heard about this.
Okay.
Sounds great.
You can do it with broccoli too. It doesn't matter. The idea is that you take either the cauliflower or the broccoli and you take the big hand grater and you grate, 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 grate. And then you just saute it in a little bit of olive oil. You could put it on a sheet pan and roast it in the oven and keep stirring it, watching it carefully until it crisps up. And you have what's called cauliflower rice or broccoli rice.
I throw into pasta too.
Yes, your friend, right?
Yeah,
the real Italian.
Yeah, they grate it or chop it really fine and saute it first with some tomato and then just take fresh pasta and toss it instead of having, and I like it so much better. I don't, even when it's roasted, I don't like big chunks of broccoli and never have.
I do. Smaller, I think it's almost like eating a tree.
Yeah,
like a
I don't
big
like
piece
that,
of broccoli.
Dude. Well, it's again, like well, face it, it's a taste thing. I'd rather have it chopped up really fine.
Interesting. I mean, I think I could.
Or grated.
You know, listen, here's the thing. You don't hear us on the show talking about things in a way that is really super negative. We're really focusing on things that we like. We're picking the cookbook authors we like, the restaurants we like, the dishes we like, the recipes we like.
Yep.
It's not that we're positive about everything. It's that we think, look, we've got about an hour with you. You may listen in one, two, or three bites to the show. We want to tell you about the things we think are terrific. It's called curating.
Yeah.
That's what I do. That's what my compatriots here on the show do. So, you know, you might love broccoli in its whole form. That's good. That's good.
That's good. You've already got that covered. But for people who don't,
chop it up really fine. And listen, if you
and I'm saying that, and there's nothing wrong with it.
No.
I think former President Bush didn't like broccoli.
I remember, yeah.
But I'm telling you, if you chop it up, you can
even get
kids to
eat it. Doesn't he seem like the most liberal man, though? So anyway, try grating your vegetable and
totally
then sautéing it.
A really cool idea is doing that whole ricing thing. Mm-hmm. You could do cauliflower, broccoli, maybe a few couple other
carrots
vegetables,
to give it some color.
And then just make it an all vegetable paella with that shredded vegetables.
Ooh,
make it nice and easy to eat, and everything cooks down.
What a good idea!
Evenly. Oh, yeah, that could be really cool.
And, you know, putting olive oil on the pan, whether it's a sauté pan, a sheet pan in the oven, or throwing chicken on top and letting it just kind of caramelize on the bottom, whatever you want to do with it, it's just terrific that way, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you're losing the fiber by grating it. It's still right there.
Yeah.
Okay, you want to do the wine. I'm afraid we'll run out of time because we've got the fair food. And wait till we get to that. Think about the fairs from your childhood all the way up to adulthood.
Oh, yeah.
how crazy that stuff can be.
Oh, so much
fun. So we're going to talk about the crazy.
Such great memories.
We're also going to talk about stuff that is just so interesting.
Talk about going from broccoli to fair food.
Yeah, that's what we do. That's
we, wow. We had to get you, we had to get you
big
healthy.
Jump there.
We had to like, get you healthy first.
Yeah, broccoli on a stick.
Generous vision on the food.
Donut.
Okay, Mark, here is, we were talking about this earlier. This is a wine that Mark discovered, and I, after tasting this, absolutely adored this red. Now, if it's hot on the day you try it, you know, things being what they are, it really can be. I put this in the refrigerator for a good half hour and then pour yes. it with a good chill on it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a red from the Mendoza region of Argentina, and it's called Finca, which stands for farm. Mm. Finca El Origen. So of the original farm.
Of the origin. It's so there, when they first started tilling this land over, you know, 40 years ago, they found fossils, like these little nautilus fossils in the ground. So they felt that the terroir was from the ocean. This is ocean land that has risen up when the mountains and the Andes. So you're
what's the closest ocean, I wonder?
The Atlantic. Well, actually, if you go to the other side of the Andes, you have the Pacific.
Oh, my goodness.
That's probably a little bit closer because it's probably from Mendoza. It's probably 5 hours to the Atlantic coast, and it's probably
honestly,
only about an hour and a half.
Yeah, but mileage means you have to go up over the Andes.
If you're flying, it's too... It's,
can I just add to this? This is on our website, a picture of the label. This wine, it is absolutely a delicious red, and it's about
$15
a bottle. Yeah. This is a bargain for this price. This is a real and made in a wholesome way, hand harvested, all that. Can I just quickly add something about this soil? When you've got soil that has these fossils still in it from the sea, what happens in modern life is that minerals that used to be here and help the human body have been leached out of the soil. When you've got soil with this still in it, you've got these unusual minerals in the soil. And the idea of how that helps the human body thrills me.
Absolutely.
It's a theory that I...
That's very
personal kind of crazy theory. But anyway, I'd love that. And this is delicious. How do you describe it? I'll help you.
So
and let me pour some.
Yeah, pour a little.
Okay,
everybody try a little.
Oh, thank
for me,
you.
I love that it's got beautiful, intense flavors of dark plum.
What's the fruit forward part of this as I take a sip? Go ahead.
For me, it's plum. The characteristics of plum and berry. You know, you think of blackberry, blueberry.
So I've got that plum, not the sour part, but the dark part of a plum.
The dark part, the ripe, sweet part.
Yeah. And then I've got, so this is not a sweet wine, though, very dry.
No, not a sweet wine.
And so then I've got a whisper of a black cherry in there somewhere. Do you?
Yep.
Not the sweet black cherry, but something black cherry-ish. And so, and yet I've got that thing where if you have a cup of tea and there's this sort of slightly dry feeling in your mouth.
Yeah.
That happens. When you get that, that's called a tannin in wine. And it means that it has structure and
body.
That body is what makes it so go so well with food, and
meat,
yeah,
protein,
especially meat, yeah. Argentinian steak.
It cuts
right?
through that protein. It cuts through that fat that might be on that meat.
Mm. What goes together grows together.
Exactly.
All those Las Pampas, all that beautiful Argentine meat with this wine.
Oh. Wonderful land, beautiful, beautiful place.
So for me,
can we go?
Let's do a show there. This is a sipper.
Yeah.
It's also a
carry it right into dinner.
Fabulous with even roast vegetables, you know, right now.
And it's a
fantastic.
Unique blend. It's Cabernet blended with Malbec. You hear a lot of blends that will have Malbec and Merlot, but to blend Malbec and Cabernet, it's really kind of unique in the market.
Is it?
It is. It is. Just those two grapes.
Malbec and Cabernet together alone is unique in the market.
It is really kind of unique. You'll see it blended with other grapes, but it's just two grapes.
Like a Bordeaux blend, but just of the two.
Just of the two.
So love this, Mark. Great discovery. And thank you so much. Around $15 a bottle. And that is a very good price for this wine because it's definitely drinking like at least a $20 bottle of wine.
Attractive.
This
so
is a
luscious.
Real wine. Finca El Origen. Don't worry about it. It's on our website, fuchmoos.org. A lot of wine stores have our shelf talkers. And so it says,
so you can
Middleton,
pick it right out. Yeah.
Recommendation. You can see it hanging on the shelf. If you don't, please write to us and tell us, and we'll make sure that you get those. You can talk to also Mark and Alex, our wine guys on the show, and get the labels that are designed for the show. Very quickly, before we go to food from state fairs, Food Network did a thing on the most wonderful. I'm a person who, in the evening, during the week, could make a meal out of this. And I know, Lori, I think you're like this too. This is prosciutto-wrapped shrimp and melon.
Ooh.
Now, melon will start to come from other parts of the world, but it's local right now. And so we're talking about bringing a pot of water to a boil and putting the shrimp in for a couple minutes, really. And then in a bowl, you put the shrimp and add these cantaloupe or watermelon you could use, a little bit of olive oil and vinegar and honey, add a little pepper, which seems to be healthy, as we said earlier on the show.
Helps the grill, Mark.
So what you're doing is putting a piece of prosciutto around shrimp and a slice of melon. It's that simple. And there you go. Now, I would be happy. People think I'm crazy. But I could eat six of those for dinner.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd be happy.
Oh, yeah. You know what I love
I really
about
would.
That? Matt six. And I will get like a cantaloupe. And
are
then...
you are you laughing at me?
Yeah, six. Or... You could eat six of them. Honeydew melon also might be good.
Oh,
yeah.
That's good. Oh,
the
yeah.
thing no. is, you buy a big melon at the grocery like store six. And you can't eat the whole thing for breakfast. I love the idea that you could do it for dinner. So it breaks up the monotony of, you know, it's just two of us at home. So to eat a huge, you know, melon.
Oh, if you
well, she
a...
said six, but she didn't say how big the skewer was.
That's true.
So it's like it's a foot and a half skewer.
And it's two
with
whole
quite
melons.
A bit of shrimp and melon.
Yeah, and it's two whole melons.
Six of them would be just enough.
Chris, help me.
No, because I couldn't eat just six.
I'm thinking a whole melon per person.
Six.
Maybe a bag of shrimp. A pound and a half of prosciutto. And we're good.
You need five
six.
Melons. Okay. You know, I think it's dinner. I'm sorry. If you want to put it on a biscuit, you could. But honestly, I
no
think
biscuit
that's
needed.
The other thing is going out.
Maybe if you're a big guy or something.
On the weekend, if you're
food.
Having like big dinners with friends and stuff, but it's
this
fun
is tapas.
In the middle of the you yeah. know middle of a work week eating light. I think allows you to save up some points for Saturday
for the weekend.
Night, Friday night.
Only I like
had
how you
six
think.
Little melon slices.
That's
you save up calories for Wednesday. Okay.
It's Thursday through Sunday. It's the weekend.
Thursday through Sunday.
Wow.
I know. Okay. Isn't no. every day the weekend? It should be.
Really?
I know.
It should be.
You know, you just have a different state of mind.
Yeah.
That means we all don't have any work.
What do you mean? What are you talking about? Eating and drinking is work for me.
No, it is
that
work
is true.
For you.
It is.
Okay.
You chose that career on purpose,
I
didn't
did.
You?
I did.
What are they going to say about us? No, it's hard work.
It really is. It is.
No kidding. It actually sure. is. Okay. We love the local. You know that. Please support your local food growers and food makers. Lots at the farmers market right now. Coming up next, we're going to do the food from country fairs. More delicious conversation coming your way. We'll be right back.
If I was you, I'd want to be me too. I'd want to be me too. I'd want to be me too.
You ate a pan of biscuits, a pot of kidney stew. You drank a gallon of milk, you ate a pound cake too. A skillet of liver, a dozen of eggs, 12 hot dogs and 8 broad legs. You know you eat too much.
This is the Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life. Coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County, the East End of Long Island, and the Hamptons. The senior producer is Robin Doyon Aiken, and we have Lori Mack, the WNPR reporter, doing our engineering today as an incredible favor to us. Thank you, Lori. To hear the show on WNPR, it airs Thursdays at 3 and 9, and then Saturdays at noon. Podcasts, our curated recommendations, everything we talk about on the show at foodschmooze.org. Now, here's the deal. If you are on Facebook, can we talk about fairs, fair food,
please,
the one you go to? Let us know if there is a fair in your area that you have been to that you think is really awesome. Chris, have you?
The Goshen Fair just happened.
I know. Okay. Let me just tell you.
Steak sandwiches, beef jerky, Notodynes.
We love this stuff.
Yeah.
So here's where we are on Facebook. Faith Middleton, Food Schmooze. Those four words. On Facebook, let's start a dialogue about this because I think this is fantastic. And here's our inspiration. This book by George Geary, he also did the Cheesecake Bible. You might remember that. But George Geary has done this cookbook, Fair Foods. And it's posted information about it on our website, too. We decided to go to all these fairs and find out which were the most popular recipes, which were the most offbeat recipes. If you go to fairs, you know that, from the state and county fairs. Mark Raymond has looked up all the fairs from our region. And so you're going to hear him talking about those, you know, Biggie and all the others. There were so many. And so, hey, George, welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Well, it's a party.
Oh, yeah.
You got that, George. George, thank you for being with us. I love that you did this book.
Well, thank you so much. It was a lot of fun doing the book.
What made you think of it? Was it just that no one's done this, or was
there's that. And I worked at the largest county fair in the country for 28 years.
For people, which one is that?
Los Angeles.
Wow, now, I would have never guessed.
That is a huge surprise to me.
Absolutely. Yeah. No one knows that we have farm animals in Southern California. In fact, they make fun of the whole thing of California and fairs with billboards that have, like, goats on it, and they'll say, come to where the real goat cheese pizza came from.
Nice.
So it's like a slap in the face.
Oh, that's
goat,
good.
You know, so.
Yeah.
But it's really fascinating because there's one corner of Los Angeles County, Pomona area, that is very still agricultural. And they have the farm animals out there. So they bring kids in from the city during the day, and they do these kids programs, so they kind of see what the farm is all about out there.
Yeah. Isn't
this, the fairs, I think like going to farms that have farm stands or farm tours, keeps us in touch with where our food comes from.
Yeah.
It helps those farmers because then we shop at those farm stands. And this is such an important part of, if you're in a city, this is fantastic to do.
The smell of hay, the dust.
Yeah, and if you're out in the country, you know how important this is. So I just love every bit of it. It ranges from cheesy to absolutely fantastic, right? So, George, how do you think about what I think of as the crazy food at the state fair? Yeah, like I'm looking at deep fried bacon.
Well, see, the book, we have normal food, I call it, and then we have the crazy food. And everyone thinks everything's fried in the book, too, which we don't have.
I don't think that.
My most popular place is the beverages.
Oh, yeah. Now you're talking my language.
So, but people go to fairs for funnel cake. They go for the deep fried bacon.
Corn dogs.
They go for deep fried Oreos.
Oh,
I'm looking at your, you know, some of the things that you have featured.
Deep fried pickles.
And on purpose, I'm pointing out there are, like, there's one. Where was this? The spicy peanut butter and jelly cheeseburgers. Where was that? That was near the country fair, right? At in the Midwest?
Yeah, it was Midwest somewhere that I saw something to that effect. I could have been Iowa, because Iowa really has some wild stuff. But, you'd think peanut butter. And it's kind of that sweet and salty and savory all together.
So that recipe, it's in the book too, is ground beef and salt and pepper, of course, but creamy peanut butter and Swiss cheese is going to be on the top, and grape jelly, a little bit of jalapeno, and the buns. Now, theoretically, that sounds crazy, but when I look at that combination of ingredients, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I get why that might be really terrific.
I'd take a
bite. Chris.
And I think things taste different when you're at a fair, too. Like, you can really do stuff like that at a fair, and you're like, damn, that's good.
Well, I mean...
Well, yeah, there is the heat of the fair, the adult beverage, maybe, and the crazy people. Is it the best place to people watch? And you think,
only
I would
second
never
to an airport.
Worn that in my whole life.
Yeah. You know?
And the kids competing for the agricultural awards take this so seriously, and well, they should. It is not an easy thing to raise these animals they're raising, or for these farm wives and husbands, because both do it, to make the pickles, make the pies, make the ice cream make.
The part that I was in charge of was the judging.
Oh, I'd do that.
Oh.
That'd be
and
fun.
We could write a book all on, but these people have to die first. Because all
what,
of
what do you mean?
Well,
stories
the fighting that they would do. And I won't want to name any names, but I'm almost saying her name. This one woman, she, very nice. I became friends with her over the years, but she would intimidate the judges to an extent where she would just give this smirk to where it just went right through you, and the judges would like turn their back on her. And her stuff was good. Okay, one time she comes up to me and she says, George, why didn't my cake win? And I said, which one was yours? Because you're a number. I don't know who anybody is. And it was a cake contest, any flavor you want. I looked at her and I said, listen, let's call her Mary. I said, Mary, you made a prune mocha cake. Do you really think that's going to win?
You know?
And she kind of looked at me and she said, I guess you're right. And I said, the lemon chiffon one. Prune mocha. I said, you aren't hitting the demographics here.
She really wanted the blue ribbon.
Oh, yeah. It's just really funny.
Here's the thing.
There's a small segment of the market that'd be good for. But
George, you know what, George? This is such a serious thing. Once Carol Peck from Good News Cafe in Woodbury and I think there was a third judge, I can't remember who, we were asked to judge in Litchfield County, Connecticut, one of these country fair apple pie contests. And we got into, as three judges, the most amazing debate, you know, you could say fight, about what constituted the proper apple pie, much acid versus how much sugar. I liked it sweeter.
Too
Carol
soft,
liked it tartar.
Sweet.
Which were the apples, the crust? Oh, my goodness. When people make this stuff in a competition, this is an artist who's really takes this seriously, entering and... Of course, it's like...
My pie's going to win.
My pie's
going to win.
we have a barbecue contest. And this one
Am I being too earnest? Go ahead.
This one guy was so sure he was going to win the barbecue contest. He was walking around with the samples of his products, walking around all like puffed up chest, the whole bit, and all excited. And I'm watching him, and I didn't know who had won. Third prize, he didn't win. Second prize, he didn't win. But he was sure he had the first prize. First prize, it's not him. It's these two ladies that were, well, at the time, it was in the 80s. They weren't married together, but they were together, and you knew they were together, but that was just uncalled of. And he kicked his barbecue with the hot coals across the pavement. He was so mad that two women beat him out.
Oh,
and
boy.
I thought, I am so glad they won.
Absolutely.
Worldwide wrestling right there.
But, yeah, I was ready for them to get down there on the mat. And the girls would have won.
No, this is great. The girls.
The girls would have won.
Okay, the girls. Yep. All right, so here we go. I want to get into some of the recipes in the book, one of which Chris just made, and we had the best time eating it. Chris, can you talk about this? Yep. The pulled pork sliders, and then Mark is going to tell us where some of the fairs are around our region.
Yeah.
Chris, the pulled pork sliders were Hungarian paprika. Yep. This is in the book. George Gary's book, Fair Foods, the most popular and offbeat recipes from America's state and county fairs. Love the idea of this. Pulled pork sliders, Hungarian paprika, sea salt, black pepper, garlic powder, cayenne pepper, dried thyme, honey, coconut water, red wine vinegar, canola oil, brown onions, pork shoulder cut in half, and then, of course, the rolls. How did it come together?
So you take all the ingredients up until the onions. So the paprika, salt, pepper, garlic, cayenne, thyme, honey, coconut water, vinegar, and oil, and you mix it all together like a big paste. And you take that and you smear it all over the pork shoulder. You take
Which is cut in half.
You got this big chunk. And then you take your onions, put them on the bottom of a slow cooker, put that pork that's smothered in the paste on top, put the lid on, 7 hours.
And it becomes so soft you can shred it with a fork.
Two forks. I took two large forks and just sort of pull it all apart. And then I used little potato rolls, but whatever, little slider rolls, and sandwiches, right?
It was delicious.
It was really fun. If you're somebody who likes extra salt or extra spice,
just
throw
it up.
That in too. So, George, this is Iowa State Fair, right?
This type is all over the place. Now, none of the recipes are original from a fair company, because no one would give you recipes, so I adapted a lot of the recipes. A lot of Midwest do a lot of pulled pork. Here in California, we do it too. Nobody cares about
that. Wait. Oh, this is where we hit rewind, people. This is something. So people at the fairs, as we go through life, you can say to people, most people will give you a recipe. Every once in a while, someone will say, I can't give that out. No, that's a family recipe. That's a secret thing. So you're saying that at the fairs, they basically will not give you the actual recipe?
No,
because they think you're another another vendor looking to make a similar thing.
They don't want you to win first place.
So how do you do that? What do you do in the face of it?
Because this book is my 11th book, and I'm really good at recreating recipes. I used to be at work at Disney, and if you look at the corn dog recipe, which is all over the internet right now,
I know
one of the best 10 items to eat at Disneyland.
Nice.
And it's number 3 right now. And I created that back in 1991. Yeah, awesome. And they're still using the same recipe.
Can I tell you?
If I got a nickel on each corn dog sold,
wouldn't that have been something? Am I mortified? I'm mortified to tell you. Honestly, I am, because it's such an American thing. I have never in my life tasted a corn dog, and I'm dying to.
I've had his corn dogs, because I go to Disney every year. And corn dogs on my list.
Really?
Dipped in mustard?
George.
How can you not like
you've
corn
got
dogs?
A personal
it's like
fan.
Sweet from the corn.
See, now I know who I can say when I'm there next time. I know George Geary.
The original.
Hey, George, I want to get to the recipes that you gave us for the site, and we're so appreciative.
Oh, I don't know what I gave you.
Okay, so let me tell you. You gave us
a Christmas present. You like what I gave you.
I love you. Really, I do. All right, roasted sugar pecans.
People walk around with these like little paper cones.
I love these.
And eat them.
So pecan halves, egg whites, and granulated sugar. Could not be easier.
Easiest thing.
And then we want to get to the candy apples, because soon in the New England and New York region, we're going to get to these candy apples. So, medium apples, stems removed, granulated sugar, light corn syrup, cold water, red paste food coloring, and vanilla extract. This is how you do it. And this is a classic fair staple in this season, right?
Right. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You gotta have
the caramel apples, either one of those.
Mark, tell us about some of the fairs in our region that we're either in or on the way.
All right. The Berlin Fair, the Orange County Fair, the Four Town Fair, and the Guilford Fair. Coming up, we've got the Durham Fair and the Harwinton Fair. And then, of course,
Durham Fair, I know. I just love that fair.
That's
go ahead.
And then overall, right now for New England, we have the Big E going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is fantastic.
I think some of the best French fries I've ever had in my life in that old, I don't know what that oil is, but
it's oil.
It's like there's just something about that oil.
When we were kids at the Guilford Fair, we were just learning in school about how, you know, some oils were bad. So I asked the guy, what kind of oil is that? He's like, it's oil. But what kind of oil? He's like, motor oil.
This is so good because it's so filled with potato flavor, yeah. Because they've used it so often. Fat. Honestly, it's just fantastic. It's like my mother used to do. George Geary, I love your idea. I love that you did this. Thank you so much. Also for giving us a heads up about how great the fairs are in our region in this season. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. Next time I'm coming live.
Would you?
That would be great.
I would love that. You let us know anything you do, any book you do. Okay.
You bring corn dogs.
This one is called Fair Foods, the most popular and offbeat recipes from America's state and county fairs. If you've had something at a fair that you loved, chances are you'll find it in this book. Thanks a lot, George.
Thanks so much.
We're on WNPR Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, listen for my 60-second food schmoozes and never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to my.
Hey, don't want the party to end? Well, neither do we. Talk with us anytime online at foodschmooze.org.